Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. I'm Dawn Davenport. I'm both the host of the show as well as the director of the nonprofit, creatingafamily.org. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that I probably created this topic in this interview because I need it as much as anyone else. The topic is how to raise an intense child. And I, as a parent, raised, as she is now an adult, but I did raise a child who was more intense, more energetic, more argumentative, just more everything. And it was a challenge. And it really helps when you understand that these kids, yes, they can be harder to raise, but it's also a gift. Their intensity is a gift. And I just think it is such an important topic. And I know that I, as a parent, had trouble finding good resources. So it stands to reason that creating good resources is what I need, what I want to do to help others. So today we're talking about how to raise an intense child. We'll be talking with Howard Glasser. He is the creator of the Nurturing Heart Approach to Parenting. He is also the author of Transforming the Difficult Child and Transforming the Intense Child Workbook. I both love the titles for those books, but I also love the attitude that they reflect. This is a re-air of a show that we did just a little while ago. It is such an important topic, and as I've already mentioned, it touches my heart and touches my life. So for all those reasons, I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Welcome, Howard, to Creating a Family. As I mentioned, I am really looking forward to talking with you.
Same here, Dawn. Thank you. Thanks for all the great work you did.
Thanks. What do you consider? I guess it starts off, I think we all have our own definition of an intense child. What do you consider to be an intense child?
You know, it may be that some kids are born with more intensity or somehow arrive at having more intensity because of life circumstances. To me, it's life force. To me, at any given moment during our day, we get zapped with, you know, we might be overwhelmed with our life force. You know, something may happen in our midst that throws us and we get, you know, triggered or joyful, and we, you know, can we handle our life force? Some people on planet Earth have more life force than others, however they obtain it, and on a more consistent basis. And they don't necessarily have the inner structure to handle what's on their plate. And that brings kids to mind.
Yeah. You know, I always say, my child is more. She's more loud, more energy. And their reaction to most things is simply more. And they go from like 5 miles an hour to 60 miles per hour in about a second. And it's more. But you know what I so appreciate about how you define it is that when we are parenting children who are intense, it's easy to slip into the viewing it as a negative because sometimes their behaviors are difficult and they kind of, and their more is overwhelming to us. But I like how you describe it because it's not a negative. It's a life force. It could be driving us crazy, but it could be one of their greatest strengths.
I think it's actually the fuel of our greatness. And, you know, if you woke up tomorrow morning and your intensity was gone, you know, anybody, we'd have trouble getting out of bed. We wouldn't be able to, it would rain on our parade of being able to live our lives fruitfully, passionately. And I think it's the fuel of our greatness. That's been my life work, is how to hinge those two things and have it be clear and doable for people on a journey of being alongside intensity, their own or somebody else's.
Yes, exactly. And the reality is that our intense kids will often collect a host of labels and diagnoses. And what are some of them that you see that these kids collect along the way?
As you're referring to, Dawn, intensity can go awry. And it often gets equated with symptomatology, and symptomatology, if I am a professional in the field I grew up in, and any number of medical model professions, social work, psychiatry, medicine, you're ethically deemed to start categorizing it and put those symptoms into categories. And before you know it, you're ethically bound to provide a diagnosis and provide best practices, which still to this moment is medication A, B, C, or D, unfortunately.
Well, and sometimes you're so right. And sometimes a label or a diagnosis is helpful. Very often it is hurtful, but at times it is helpful because it allows parents and children to access treatment and allows our insurance to cover some of it. And it also allows parents to have a way of coalescing with others and asking questions, you know, but I mean, I see things and certainly many children end up with the ADHD or ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, or conduct disorder, or PTSD, or anxiety disorder. There could just be a host of it's an alphabet.
Yeah, you said them all, Dawn.
Yeah.
You got them.
Yep, been there.
And depression, because it's such a confusing life to kids that they wind up depressed along with being anxious and ADHD.
Such a good point, actually, yes. So what makes some kids more intense than others?
Well, you know, I've stayed away from trying to answer that question in any scientific way. And I'll tell you why, but I think some kids are just flat out born that way. Mm-hmm. I think some kids are exposed to stressful lives, neighborhoods, inner circles, outer circles, you know, but, you know, I want to say with this one thing, if it's okay, is that there are many, many learned people out there who've studied the science of, you know, they could cite every article in the history of these conditions. And half of those learned people, at the end of the day, they say it's a brain disorder and the only answers are medication A, B, C, or D. The other half say it's a chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. And these are brilliant people, but the science to me is so limited. And those people who say it's a chemical imbalance also say medication A, B, C, or D. And, you know, I am just utterly concerned that our world sees intensity as the enemy. Actually, intensity is the greatest gift ever. We need intense people on a planet, but we just simply need them to have an adequate structural underpinning so that they can take that, they could transport that wherever they go, they can live their life fruitfully by way of their more than can serve them. That's been I've seen that so many times where I would get these kids in my office before diagnosis and, you know, a month later, the parents would say, I think we got it now. I don't think we need to go see the child psychiatrist. You know, I am not that learned person. I can't cite anything in the journals, but I promise you, I think, you know, the majority of what's called ADHD is really just high intensity. And you know, the problem is most everything we do in the face of intensity, because we freak out of a kid's intensity, understandably, you know, all the parenting, conventional, normal parenting out there is upside down. It's, if you don't mind, I'll give you an example. You know,
please.
We say we love respect. We say we love responsibility. And we have very minimal ways of showing up when respect and responsibility occurs. You know, we wait for it to be sufficient enough before we say thank you, good job, which wind up being ineffectual because they're vague statements. But when a child is disrespectful, we lean in and we get excited. We, you know, we'll blow a gasket. We have the best lectures and reprimands. And kids just simply come to see the truth of energy, the reality at the level of energy. And that, it, you know, we say we love respect, but actually they come to interpret energy as we love disrespect, because that's when we show up. That's when we're excited. Mm-hmm. So we don't mean that. We don't mean to deepen a kid's impression to get more out of life through negativity, but we consistently deepen that at home and school inadvertently.
Mm-hmm. It's when we start showing our energy is when we put our energy into it when they do something we dislike.
Yes, exactly. And you know, it makes sense from an old school perspective. You know, we say we're busy. I mean, we really are busy at times, but we're never too busy for a problem.
Yeah.
You know, kids wind up feeling celebrated for the things they're doing wrong. Nobody would ever give a kid $100 bill on purpose for breaking a rule, but accidentally we're giving out those $100 bills all the time.
What do you mean? A term you use, I think you prefer to use, an energy challenged child. What do you mean by an energy challenged child?
Well, it's the silly picture that comes to mind is you have a car with a phenomenal engine, a fancy car, and it's high octane, high horsepower, it can do phenomenal things, and it doesn't have a braking system, it's not going to be as safe to drive. It's, you know, or it has an inadequate braking system. So I'll give you an example is this. In the beginning, I mean, you know, there's a diaper industry because kids in the beginning have no control. In the beginning, at the very beginning, there's zero control. We ideally acquire control in a commensurate way along with our life force. You know, kids get, they emulate, they mobilize, they start getting excited about things. And hopefully we as parents inspire enough, or they have innately enough developmentally, they come along with enough self-control, regulation, to handle their level of intensity. Some kids, because they have high octane and so much horsepower, so to speak, their braking system is inadequate for the amount. So it means that parents either knowingly or unknowingly have to either be cleaning up on aisle 10 all the time, or they have to get really wise in how they're going to build that extra modicum of structure. So kids will, to me, it's building inner wealth and building a sense of where the lines are, where this, you know, we need to make it more than adequate to level up with the high octane.
Mm-hmm. So
does that make sense?
It does. I think what I'm hearing is that an energy challenged child or person has more energy than they currently have self-control. And so it's
yes.
Kind of a disorder of self-control, if for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm.
But that's good news, Dawn, because, you know, it's good news if you have a method that will help. It's bad news if you don't, because we can make things worse all the time.
And that is the challenge of parenting an intense child is our job is to, it always felt to me as our job is to celebrate and not view their intensity as a bad thing. At the same time, we are helping put in structure for them to gain more self-control.
Yes.
Because ultimately they do need that. You know, you mentioned something in Transforming the Difficult Child, that many intense or difficult kids love video games more so than the average child. And I have noticed that too. Why is that?
Well, I think while a child's playing a game, life makes total sense. And the rules are inherently clearer and stronger and more encompassing. The incentives are more clear and encompassing. And the combination of that structurally allows kids I get it. Life makes sense. I can live my life in greatness. I can. All they want to do is go level, 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 be the best in the world. And you know, I'll pretend I'm a kid playing a game for a second. While I'm playing the game, while I'm going towards the goals, while I'm not breaking the rules, the game's kind of in my face, confronting me. You use the word celebrating. It's celebrating me again and again and again, unlimitedly. And it's all energy. It's celebrating me energetically. At any next second, I'm free to break rules. Game doesn't say, don't do this, don't do that. And if I break a rule and I cross a line, even a hair, the game doesn't go, oh, poor Howard, he's having a bad day. Or poor Howard, he's having a good day. Let's not disturb the momentum. It always delivers a consequence. And we look at these consequences and we think they're drastic and punitive and they're, you know, blood spurting, heads rolling. But who's actually back in the game in 2 seconds? The child is. So the game in, game on is so powerful that game not in feels like an eternity. It feels forever, and the child can't wait to get back in. And if you watch kids coming back in the game, if they've been held accountable and a limit's been set, they don't just come back in. They come in just dying, rearing to go. They want to go, you know, they're determined not to break that rule and every other rule. And all they want to do is go more dramatically forward than ever before. So the game has a logic that to me is transposable.
And consistency, a logic and consistent.
Total. Mm-hmm. Total yeah. consistency.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I hope you're enjoying this podcast as much as I am. Did you know that we have more expert-based content just like today's podcast, thanks to our partners at the Jockey Being Family Foundation? When you go to bit.ly/JBF support, that's bit.ly/JBF support, you will find several free online courses from the creatingafamily.org online parent training center. There are 5 courses to choose from, like Disciplining While Maintaining Attachment. That supports today's content very well. Each course is free when you use the coupon code JBFSTRONG at checkout. You know, let's talk a moment. You mentioned the structure of games, and I wanted to talk a minute about structure. And while I think all children need structure, I think the high-intensity child really needs structure. And that's certainly been my experience. But there, you talk about the positive forms of structure and versus negative forms of structure. What do you mean by that? What is positive and what's an example of positive structure versus negative structure?
There's 2 lines of thinking here. One is, of course, having a child in programming that's suitable, that makes sense to them, like dance or scouting or sports or whatever is fine. That's a positive structure. What I'm referring to really in my sense of positive structure is how do we show up as adults in that child's life where we're taking stands, where we're determined, you know, I am not going to give myself to the nonsense. I'm not going to accidentally reward negativity with the gift of me. I'm going to be very clear how I show up. I'm going to show up for the good stuff. I am going to be determined to point out, here's you right now being respectful. Right now, here's the evidence, Dawn. You're listening really well. It's so clear to me. You're thinking about what I'm saying, and you're mulling it over and having it inform the conversation. And that reveals to me your kindness. It reveals to me your thoughtfulness. I could keep going. I could spend the whole interview telling you that. The third thing, part of the structure, is here's the rules, and I can't stop you from breaking a rule. But if you do, I'm going to reset me, and I'm going to say reset, and I'm going to unplug me. I'm not going to give the gift of me to negativity or what I deem negativity. Every adult has a right to deem what they deem to be negative. But by being clear, let's say we're in a room with a kid and all of a sudden that kid interrupts or argues, I'm going to say reset. I'm going to unplug me, but I'm going to be ready and raring to go. Thank you for resetting. It's like the video game. I'm going to turn back immediately. I'm not a fan of 14 minutes timeout for a 14-year-old. That's nonsense. That gets people in trouble. I'd rather it be an instant. What's the truth of the moment? The truth of the moment is you look like you were going to argue and fuss and roll your eyes, but you didn't. I'm going to be applauding that. If the child rolls their eyes and fusses and swears, I'm going to say reset. I'm going to turn away. I'm going to say the word reset, but then as soon as they stop, that's what I wanted all along. I wanted the good stuff. So now I got the good stuff. 3 seconds later, am I gonna ignore that? I'm gonna be like the video game. Hallelujah. You might still feel like cussing and swearing, but you're not. Mm-hmm. You're handling your strong feelings well. To me, that's how you build self-regulation. It's like a muscle. You build it and build it, and you build inner wealth along with it, mm-hmm. which to me is different than self, you know, esteem. Mm-hmm. You know, wealth is something that just, I've seen kids grow up with inner wealth and they thrive. You don't have to tell them how to thrive. Mm-hmm. They're going to blow you away. They're going to surprise you in how they thrive.
All right, now let's get to some of the specifics. For me personally, traditional parenting techniques did not work well for my intense little wonder. And your approach to raising an intense child is based on your nurturing heart approach. What are the basic principles of this approach of parenting? You talk about 3 stands, and you've kind of alluded to them. So let's break them out. What is the first step?
Okay. Well, and the first stand is very purposely the first stand, because I feel like kids pick up that they get more in life through negativity. They get more response. They get more reactivity. So the first, when I've worked with a family, the very first thing they have to prove, the proving ground, is stand one. I refuse to give me to the negativity. I refuse to give my energy, my responsiveness, my relationship, my energy to negativity. I'm not going to do that anymore. That's stand one. And that goes a long way for a lot of kids. Once the parent proves that, they can't just say it. You can't just march into your teenager's room and say, oh, honey, from now on, I'm not giving energy to negativity. That's malarkey. You know, you gotta be the truth of that to establish that.
What are some common ways we might accidentally energize a negative? Give us some examples of how we inadvertently do that.
Well, I think the classic ways is we have these values that we hold dear, like respect that I said before, or honesty or responsibility. And when we believe in our culture across cultures that the best way to teach a lesson is to teach it in the midst of the problem. So that's when we adults get in gear and a child's done something that's, let's say, irresponsible. They've forgotten to do their homework, or they haven't done their chore, or they, you know, whatever it is that we are allergic to. That's so we in the tradition of parenting, what's out there in so many ways out there in the culture, advice, books, articles, the responsible adults, they wind up saying, Billy, you know, they start out nice enough, Billy, it's not okay to forget to do your homework. It's really important to remember. You need to tell me what your assignments are, and I need to double check it. And you might spend 10 minutes with that child in a very loving little sermonette, or a very loving, you know, reprimand, or, you know, let's say it's all love, but, you know, Billy's just gotten 10 minutes of prime time with mom. Billy's just had an upside down energetic experience. His he may not at first start putting two and two together, but at some point, Billy starts going, oh, when I am responsible, Mom hardly ever shows up. I get a whoop-de-doo good job. Thank you. Sometimes, not always, but 100% of the time when I mess up, Mom's there. She's not only there, she's there, you know. She's excited. So she loves me more. The way Billy interprets that, unfortunately, because I've proved it by turning it around so many times, from Billy's point of view, Mom loves me more when I don't do my homework.
Mm-hmm.
She values me more. I'm more meaningful when I don't do my homework, even though she says the opposite.
So what are some of the challenges that parents face when trying to apply this strand of refusing to energize energize a negative or interact with a negative?
Yeah, that's a great question. That shows your great mind, your inquisitiveness, your intelligence. Those are great qualities I already admire in you, Don. So the challenges are many. I think the main one is it's in our bloodstream to be reactive. I mean, we're only here because our ancestors managed to survive along the way. You know, how many hundreds of generations ago there were predators? In order to have survived, they had to notice tiny increments of what's wrong, hints of danger, sounds, smells, instincts that pointed to danger. So we have a hair trigger to see negativity. It's in our DNA. It's in our bloodstream. I think that's the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. And there's so many, I don't know how these books exist, but there are so many books out there that actually recommend that. That actually recommend when Billy does the wrong thing, you sit down with Billy and you tell Billy how it makes you feel. And you tell Billy why it's wrong. And those, from my point of view, is doomed. Those are doomed. They're going to make the situation worse. They're going to deepen Billy's impression that he gets more out of life through negativity.
Let me pause this show for just a moment. I find this topic so fascinating, as you could probably tell. I have always enjoyed learning more about parenting tougher to parent kids. If this episode is helping you shift your parenting perspective, would you please tell us and others about it by leaving a rating or a review? You could go to ratethispodcast.com/creatingafamily and tell us what you think. It is a simple way to help us reach other parents like you who will benefit from this as well as the great resources that we share weekly. Again, you would go to ratethispodcast.com/creatingafamily. Thanks. Okay, so the first strand is to refuse to energize the negative. And the second strand to the nurturing heart approach is to energize the positive. Give me an example of energizing the positive.
To me, it's also a refusal. It's a refusal to not see the beauty in another person's existence. An example is going out of your way to make a point of going beyond thank you and good job. It's the human tendency at this point in our world is to just say, when we think something is positive, you know, so many classrooms I've visited where a teacher believes they're being positive, but they're entirely just saying, thank you, good job, way to go, awesome. And, you know, I've said that, you know, in live events to a room full of people. And I've said, okay, intelligent people, tell me what I'm referring to, please. You know, what was I thankful for? Tell me what I was saying good job about. And nobody knows. So we have to go beyond, the imperative is to go beyond our meager ways of approving. Obviously, that we're trying to approve of something, to something that's much more strong and far-reaching and powerful. So I want to accuse kids of the great qualities that I see in them. I want to take advantage of the moments we have. So to me, it's a stand of commandeering the situation in a way and going, I'm going to use my determination to call this kid out on their successfulness. I'm going to be very specific. You know, we think nothing of being specific when things go wrong.
Right. Yeah, it's a specificity. You know, it occurs to me that we focus on the negative, which is what you admonish us not to do in strand one, because we're geared to be reactive. And that's what's bugging us. It's in our face. We have to deal with that because it's forcing us in our minds to deal with that. But the strand two, which is energizing the positive, is requiring us to be proactive, to notice when it would be easy to just skate. You know, at that point, the kid's not bugging us. The kid's doing something good. Therefore, we could go on with our life doing whatever it is we're doing. You know, we're cleaning the house, or we're catching up on emails from work, or we're doing whatever it is. We don't have to react then. But the challenge is to force ourselves to react when they're doing what we want them to do, so that our energy is pouring into them at that point. Yeah. Is that the general gist?
Yeah, that's very much the gist, is being engaging our own gears, being proactive, but doing it in a way that's got the greatest lenses in the world, you know, in an enhanced way, where we're looking at something under the microscope and we can stop ourselves when we're saying, you know, the normal thank you and say, well, hold on, I got to tell you why I'm thankful. Mm-hmm. Or what I meant by good job, here's what I meant. Mm-hmm. And I think we also need an expansive way of seeing what's actually good. I mean, you know, when things are not going wrong and nothing superb is like magnanimous is happening right, there's still the opportunity of saying to a child, I got to tell you something really wonderful. We've gone the whole afternoon. You haven't broken any rules. You haven't yelled. You haven't been mean to your brother. You haven't teased. You haven't said any name calling. Those are really wonderful indicators to me that you are being kind. You're choosing to not break the rules. That's very considerate of you. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to reel in. There's so much low-hanging fruit of success. I've had parents say to me, well, I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing good going on now. And I said, well, you know, the referral slip said your child cusses 24/7 and your child has angry outbursts 24/7. I see your daughter over there. She doesn't look happy about being in the office, but she's not yelling. She's not swearing. Do you appreciate that? And they go, yeah. And I said, well, can you put that into words? I remember one family who was in really big trouble. And the mom turned and looked at her daughter and said, okay. It took her a while, but she said, I appreciate that you're not swearing right now. That really means a lot to me. And they both burst out crying. And she wound up being an extraordinary parent. She looked extremely not promising when I first met them.
Very funny. Extremely not promising. That I'm going to have to remember that. Okay, so you talk about different ways to recognize the positive and active recognition, experiential recognition, or proactive recognition, creative recognition. Is the indifference between, what is the difference between those, and is the difference important for us as parents?
Well, I think essentially the first three you mentioned, active, experiential, creative recognition, are ways of taking what is happening and reeling it in and putting it into words and making it into appreciative comments. Active is just saying what you see. Here's what I noticed is you put your plate in the sink. and you cleaned the counter and you ran water on the sinks, on the plate, so it wouldn't get crusty. And the experiential part is how to put icing on a cake and say, and what that shows me is that you care, that it wasn't your turn to clean the dishes tonight, but you made it easier for your sister. And that was very thoughtful. So it's a way of putting values, inserting the child into your being that value. I see that value in you. I see that I see you in this more meaningful way. And then the creative is when I am, really, it puts me as the parent in the driver's seat. In other words, I can say, I know we're about to have dinner, but I want you to stop right now and go have a popsicle. And I'm using a nonsensical example here, but I want you to go get that. I want you to go have a popsicle. I'm making an exception today. The one and only day of the year is popsicle day. Go get a popsicle. And then the child goes, they look at you funny, like, stop doing your homework, go get a popsicle. And then you say to the child, thank you for doing exactly what I asked you to do. That shows me that you were really tuned in to what I wanted and you stopped exactly when I said to go and you went and made it happen. I want to get creative in how I create successes. I know that's preposterous. That was probably a terrible example, but that's kind of what I mean by it. And then the last one is proactive recognition. That's where I really like to go to town and let kids know, here's you not breaking the rules. Here's the rules you're not breaking right now. I want, it's hard to set a limit if you haven't declared what the limits are. And it's a great way of teaching the limits. And it's a great way of making it fair to kids so that they feel like the rules aren't the enemy, like the rules are getting them noticed as well. And I really have found that to be very empowering for the parent too.
And I understand what you meant by creative recognition. Sometimes when kids, and quite frankly, parents are in a downward spiral, all we're seeing is the negative, and all our kids are experiencing is negative. And if we create a situation where our child can succeed, it gives us the opportunity to be able to then recognize their success. But we may have to create the situation that they can succeed. I think that's how I would understand that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is there a problem, though, with giving our children too much praise? I mean, the generation right before this one is the, every child gets a, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody, no matter what we do, it's good. That type of thing. Is there a problem of slipping back into that with the second strand of energizing the positive?
No. I'm just going to say flat out no. There are many people for many reasons who say, "Fooey, you shouldn't praise kids." But then, I mean, there's holes in their reasoning. First of all, it's because all they're saying is thank you and good job. And that's never gonna suffice anyway. It's not nourishing. I'm looking to nourish a child's soul. I'm looking to really connect on them with a deep level. And then some of the people I've seen be adherence to that point of view of not praising. They'll think nothing is spending 10 minutes with a child when they've done something wrong and read them the riot act, but they're not willing to even acknowledge a child when something goes well. That's destiny will meet that person. They're going to find that the majority of kids in their midst are going to figure them out really quickly and figure out how to be negative to get their involvement. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I disagree with that vehemently.
Mm-hmm. This show, as well as all the resources that we provide at Creating a Family, is dependent upon agencies who believe in our mission and are willing to back that belief with their dollars to help support us. One such agency is Adoptions from the Heart. Adoptions from the Heart was founded by an adoptee and is celebrating 35 years of bringing families together through adoption. They are a full-service domestic infant adoption agency specializing in open adoption. You can see adoptive parents and birth parents share their stories on AFTH TV, airing Tuesday mornings. That's AFTH TV. You could also follow Adoptions from the Heart on Facebook and YouTube to catch every episode. So let's move now to the third strand, which is absolute clarity on your limits and consequences, which harkens back to our discussion about video games. I mean, there's nothing, video games are very clear and have very firm limits as well as consequences. You don't advance to the next level or the game is over or whatever. It's very clear. So talk to me some about what the third strand, how that would look.
Yeah, everybody thinks rule. I mean, I've had contracts working with the military, you know, it's all about coming down hard. And, you know, when consequences don't work at level A, you got to go to level B, increasingly more drastic and punitive. And the danger with intense kids is they continually, that they get more and less your negativity. I mean, when you come down hard on a kid, and take them to task on something they've done wrong, we're giving relationship to negativity. It's going to make things worse. I've met so many families who pride themselves in coming down hard, and it makes things worse. What I'm saying is extraordinarily simple and easy for everybody. It offends some people because they go, "Oh, what do you mean a 2-second timeout for rolling your eyes or saying a bad word?" I mean, what we really want in our heart, what we've really wanted all along, is for the same intensity that's gone awry to be the source of a kid's greatness. That's what people want. What people really want is for the child to make good choices and to do the right thing and to be well behaved. So to me, if a child is misbehaving, I want to say reset. But I want to be on the lookout for when the behaving happens, when the good choices are happening. And if that's 1 second later or 3 seconds later, to me, if game in, game on, like the video game, is strong, then game out, game not in, why have it be more than the truth of the moment? The truth of the moment, maybe for sometimes it'll take an hour for a child to stop yelling and fussing. But for the majority of times, it's a matter of seconds. Why wouldn't I want to jump in with 2 feet and then say, now you're following the rule. Your consequence is over. Thank you for resetting. I want to build their braking system. I want to deliberately say, you're now choosing to follow the rules. You might feel like yelling now, but you're not yelling. You might feel like being disrespectful now, but you're not. You're using your power. You're using your wisdom, your control. So that's where I'm at with that. That's stand three.
Okay, so how do we, you've talked about the reset as and so explain that, what you mean by reset.
That is precisely what I just explained, is I say the word reset as I'm, that's the consequence. The reset is the consequence. And, you know, if a child crosses a line even a little bit, like in sports, I say reset. I turn away. I unplug, no gift of me to the negativity, but I'm standing really ready to plug back in when the negativity isn't happening. And then I say the reset's over.
Gotcha. So an example would that be if I'm the child is pitching a fit or whining or tattling or something that you don't want, then you say the word reset, which tells them that you're asking them to reset their behavior. You turn from them. And then as soon as they stop, maybe just because they're surprised that you turned away from them, either way, then you re-engage and say, thank you for starting over, or thank you for resetting, or whatever. Is that an example of my understanding?
Yeah, exactly. You got it completely precisely. Yeah.
And if a child, how do we get our children to comply? Or is that really not a problem in using this approach?
Well, I don't worry about that. that's not a problem, because the truth is we can't stop kids from breaking rules. They know the secret. Even if they're on Ritalin, we can't, you know, they could, you know, I remember meeting a kid in my office for the first time and his parents said, oh, he's not inter-. I was complimenting him for not being annoying and not interrupting. And his parents says, oh, that's probably because he's on Ritalin. And I asked him, he was probably 8 years old. I said, even though you're on Ritalin right now, if you wanted to break the rules, could you? And he shook his head, yes. And so I don't want the Ritalin to get the credit. And I asked him, could I stop you? And he said, no. If you wanted to, could you break a rule? So, you know, we are delusional to think we could stop kids from breaking the rules. We're much better off going, okay, you're, whatever you do, I'm going to be in the moment with you. When you don't break a rule, I'm going to be applauding. And if you do, I'm going to just simply say reset. And when you're back to not breaking rules, I'm going to be applauding you. I don't feel a need to legislate, okay, you're tomorrow, you're not going to, no rule breaking. I mean, that's silly, because we can't, you know, that's not in our control. We don't have mm-hmm. that ability. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather build their muscles, build their inner wealth, and have them gain strength over time. To me, the delicious part of my work has been, you know, that at some point, kids don't want to break rules. They get so much more out of successfulness than breaking a rule. They were only, at some point, it was just a habit of breaking rules to get relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kids want to, they want to engage generally with their parents. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they want to behave. Well, thank you so much, Howard Glasser, for being with us today to talk about raising the intense child.